Your Monday Night Raw review is coming to you in just a minute, including what was a very heel-heavy night that saw Randy Orton attack Matt Hardy. We saw Shayna Baszler bite Becky's neck. Seth Rollins and the AOP and Murphy continue their winning ways. And we even get some news about who Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins would like to face at next year's WrestleMania in Hollywood. So we're going to get to all of that, and as you guys know, a ton more, including your questions answered on the air. So stay right here. We're going to get a word from the sponsor and be right back. Do you guys love movies and podcasts? Well, you guys should check out The Buff and the Blazer. It's a movie review and discussion podcast hosted by Drew, who's the movie buff, and El Tato, the cannabis enthusiast. Together, they review and discuss the latest and greatest films at the box office. You can check out their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com. It includes articles and videos that accompany each film that they review. You can also follow them on Twitter at buffandblazer. And their show is on every single major platform that includes Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and episodes drop every Sunday. Guys, I took a listen to this podcast, and they are very professional. Their sound quality is top-notch. That is such a big deal when you're listening to podcasts, is audio quality, because that is how you reach your audience, and it is absolutely perfect, and their voices just blend well together. They have great chemistry, and they recently reviewed the 1917 film. Very well done. They go into detail. It's not profane. They're just a professional podcast that is going to be rising in the ranks pretty quickly. So jump on board. Check out The Buff and the Blazer. They're available everywhere that podcasts are available. And you can check them out on Twitter at Buff and Blazer or on their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Are you ready for your Monday Night Raw review? I'm ready, because we're about to break things down, including talking about this new vampire character that Shayna Baszler has unveiled. At least that's the general consensus among people are equating it to a vampire, and have some thoughts on that. And many people found it very hokey. Many people found it over the top, cartoonish. I have another take on this, so I'm gonna break that down, as well as Randy Orton continuing to not explain things, although you could blame that on Matt Hardy, who interrupted and paid for it in a big way and probably had one of his best promos ever in WWE. Not ever in his career. We all know what he did with broken Matt Hardy in TNA, but very inspiring. A very inspiring lecture to Randy Orton. So we're going to get that. And also Seth Rollins breaking down the team of Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe and the Viking Raiders, and just continuing to pile on the wins against them. And so we're going to dive into that as well. If you're sensing a theme here, it's that it was a very heel heavy night. So Ontario, California, you are not worth mentioning other than just a banner, because you are Ontario, California, and you are not deemed worthy of WWE's mention on air other than a quick tag at the beginning of the show, because they are just so small that they can't be bothered with towns that don't make them look good that they're visiting. So there's a lot to discuss on this Raw, and as I mentioned at the open of the show, there's also news coming out about Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns claiming who they would like to face at WrestleMania 37. So, but first, guys, as always, thank you for joining me. This is the WWE Podcast, the unofficial WWE Podcast that comes to you 7 times every single week. It may not drop daily. Sometimes I drop 2 shows in a day. But I guess in terms of the number of episodes times the number of days in a week, it is technically a daily show. So thank you guys for listening, making this show a success as we try to creep closer to the number 10 spot in Apple Podcasts. You know, it fluctuates all the damn time, and I know you guys aren't really caring too much about where we stand in the rankings, but it is a big deal because you guys are the ones that make it happen. And again, these rankings fluctuate daily. Sometimes I drop to 30 and then 20, and sometimes even into the 40s. And then, you know, every time I drop an episode, you know, you spike back up because you have more downloads. So, this show, I really want to thank you guys for making it such a success. And we all know this is just the beginning. We're working on trying to improve this show. I'm a solo act behind the scenes, and I have some great co-hosts. I have some great people that donate their time to this show to make it what it is, and I'm appreciative to them big time. But behind the scenes with the audio and the posting and the pre-editing of things, it's a one-man show from that perspective. Of course, the people that host their own shows here do record their own audio and edit it, and I appreciate that. But there's just a lot of logistics behind the scenes that most people don't really realize unless you have your own show. How much goes into it, how much post-editing there has to be sometimes. And I know many of you are like, oh, the ads. But you know what, guys, who the hell wouldn't want to monetize their show, right? I mean, it's just silly if you didn't want to, and you have to make it a labor of love for a while and then build an audience and then say, hey, am I ready for ads, right? But anyway, so guys, lots to talk about here. I'm going to be introducing a Q&A segment to the show occasionally, and I'm going to just address that now because I did get a couple of questions on Twitter. And if you guys want to, by the way, send me questions, you can do so on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can also send me an audio file if you know how. I mean, it's pretty easy. You can even do it from your phone. Just record a voice memo and then send the voice memo to realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So super easy to do. If you have an iPhone, just search for voice memo, press that record button, and then stop whenever you're done. And then you click on the little breadcrumb icon that's next to the play button, and it allows you to share it and just share it via email. Again, this is for iPhone users. Totally understand everyone's not an iPhone user, but if you have an iPhone, click on voice memos or search for it, record your message, click on share, which is the little breadcrumb icon at the left side of the screen, and send it to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. The reason I'm asking you to do that is if you'd like to get on the show and have your voice heard, and or just have your opinion. It doesn't have to be a question. It can be a quick rant. I would like to keep it under like a minute or so if you can. And to hear somebody else's voice on the show that is not a part of the show typically, it's not a co-host, it's just a listener of the show that wants to vent about a certain topic, or praise a certain topic, or if you have a question, or you want to hear my opinion on something, that is going to be the absolute best way. So if you don't want to type your question to me, do a voice memo on your phone. Even if you have Android, I'm sure they have a voice memo app, and then just record your audio file and boom, share it to, you know, share it via email and email it to me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So that's going to be a new thing that I'm starting, and I just announced that on my Twitter today. But I just wanted to give you an easy way to do the voice thing, because I know many of you are like, I don't know how to do that. Wait, what do you mean? How do I? Simple, right? Just search voice memos. I believe even Android has that. So I have an iPhone, but I'm sure that functionality extends to Android. So if not, again, you can send a question, comment, or rant to me on Twitter. And we have a couple of people who decided to take advantage of that today. And one of them came from Niladri. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm awful with names. And he asks, was there a need to portray Baszler like this bloodthirsty vampire thing? I mean, bloodthirsty ruthlessness can be displayed in a different way, such as physical brutality, beating someone to the pulp, as Lesnar did to Rey, Dominic, and Seth, but biting like this. So I guess I might as well jump in to the Baszler segment. Now, to answer your question, was there a need to do this? No, there was not a need to do it. And it's certainly the same message, because we all know WWE loves to send their messages and make their statements and whatever other platitudes that they say at least six times a show. We all know that they can portray those messages in various ways, and a lot of those ways are very formulaic. A lot of those ways are very tried and true, like you mentioned, beating someone down, beating them down brutally, even in the case of Dominic and Rey, which I love, by the way. Yes, they can do it that way. And if you feel that way is a great formula to get their message across, then fine. And it is proven to work. And I think that this was something that WWE did to change things up, to make things instantly brutal, to make this not just kind of simmer between Baszler and Becky, but to rather instantly and very quickly make this a very physical, nasty feud right off the bat. And I think it's mission accomplished, because my fear was that Baszler coming in would get more of a positive reaction than Becky Lynch, because I feel that Becky is starting to reach the point in her title run of being a little bit overstaying her welcome, and that the fans will naturally start to turn on you the longer that you hold the belt. And I didn't hear on Monday, last night, a lot of cheers for Baszler. I mean, people seemed excited at first, but certainly after she did what she did, the fans felt sympathy for Becky. That's a good way to feel sympathy. It's never done. When is the last time anyone bit somebody's neck and drew blood, or bit somebody anywhere and drew blood, right? Yes, it's a blood capsule. It wasn't real blood. We know that. But the visual, the perception of what was going on was almost, I can't remember ever seeing something like that done. So again, to answer your question, there wasn't a need. And if it's not up your alley and you find it hokey, I see why. But I think it was it was executed well enough that it successfully sent the message about what this feud is going to be from now until WrestleMania, presumably. So I actually like this segment more than most. I totally understand why people would not like it. And usually on hokey things, I'm on the downside of it. So I don't know if I'm having a brain fart, if I'm in the early stages of an aneurysm, I don't know. But it's something I actually kind of enjoyed. It made me instantly dislike Baszler. It didn't make me want to cheer her, because she's the new upcoming, you know, next call up, if you will, if that's still a thing from NXT. And it made me side with Becky further. So if they're trying to continue to portray and present Baszler as a heel and continue Becky's momentum as a face, then I think it's mission accomplished. And so that specifically I didn't have a problem with, and I actually enjoyed. Was it amazing? No, but I think it was effective because it was different, and it was something that I know that what they were trying to go for, I think, was executed well by Baszler and Becky. And so I think the execution is what saved this from being a hokey, you know, a vampire parody of some sort. So the only thing, as I was going to say, that I didn't like outside of this segment, particularly the biting, which I was actually okay with, was Becky Lynch refusing medical attention from the slowest EMTs I've ever seen in any kind of professional sport, who just kind of lackadaisically walked to the ring to tend to Becky, who is just bitten in the neck. I mean, what if she's bleeding internally? I mean, you got your spine there, your spinal cord. You got the most important part of your body just bitten into. And, you know, the EMTs are just kind of walking to the ring like, you know, it's time for lunch break. And so that, again, small things, I know, but it's things that you when you're thinking about, that means you're not thinking about the angle, you're thinking about what's taking you away from it. So very small thing, but noticeable. And you have Becky refusing medical attention like a fool, right? And this is the one thing that I know that your pride is bigger than your, you know, bigger than medical attention. And I get it. I know the God, here we go. I'm feel like I'm being WWE-ified. The message WWE was trying to send is, and always is, anytime a babyface receives medical attention, that they refuse it because their pride is, you know, overtakes their will to, or their necessity to receive medical attention, as if it's some kind of surrender of their pride. Instead, it's actually a smart thing to do. And it, you know, I feel like Vince sees that as weakness, when I see it as being a smart human being to receive medical attention. And having Becky refuse it in kind of an arrogant way, and then go to the ambulance and toss around the EMTs. Not, she didn't punch them, right? But she was arrogant towards them, pulled the driver out of the ambulance like it was Grand Theft Auto 6. And then, which isn't released, by the way, but I can't wait for Grand Theft Auto 6. Small little video game side note. Not that it's going to be released anytime soon, but anyway. So she pulls them out like it's Grand Theft Auto, treats them like garbage, but she's there to receive medical attention. These people are supposed to be helping her. And then she commandeers the ambulance inexplicably and drives herself, committing Grand Theft Auto, in an ambulance, going to the hospital, apparently in an ambulance, and then returning. And yes, we've seen Stone Cold do this before. But you know when we've seen him do it? We've seen him do it after being actually put into the ambulance and then coming back commandeering the ambulance. I mean, it fit his character more in an era that was much more edgy, and a character that it fit him more than it fit Becky. It felt a little forced with her commandeering the ambulance. We've seen this before. Bringing it back, which I actually didn't think we'd see, and having her cut a promo at the end, which I enjoyed her promo. I did not expect a follow-up to this in the same show, and I thought it was well done. She had her neck taped up, so clearly she received some kind of medical attention, even after she was, you know, stole the ambulance and drove it to the hospital. I guess you have to not look at this stuff when you're looking at wrestling. But I thought that the angle was well executed from the perspective of brutality. And Becky Lynch's words to Shayna were very serious. It wasn't Becky being Becky, being, you know, this arrogant jerk, which she's starting to morph into. It was her telling Shayna, well, you know, that you better find me before I find you. I liked that. It was just well executed. And I think, this whole segment, for all of its hokiness that it could have been, was saved, I think, by the execution. So that's my long answer and my quick review of the Shayna Baszler-Becky segment. Overall, I give it a thumbs up. I know many of you on Twitter are probably saying, what are you talking about? That was so stupid. Is she a vampire? I get it. I'm not mocking anybody that dislikes this segment, because I certainly could probably talk myself into disliking it if my brain my brain function gets rebooted. So I'm going to just kind of dumb down my brain and enjoy this segment. And but I'm curious to see what you guys think. I have a feeling I'm going to get a very split response on Twitter, and as expected. And by the way, guys, thanks so much for participating in the poll that I put up about Brock Lesnar and Goldberg's match at Super Showdown, which one's going to be shorter. you guys had, 53% think Goldberg versus The Fiend is going to be longer than Brock versus Ricochet. So it was a damn close poll, as I kind of expected. 53 to 47% believe Goldberg versus The Fiend is going to be the longer match. And I tend to believe that as well, but you could make a case for either, and we'll get a much more thorough preview of the Super Showdown as we inch a little bit closer, which is, my God, not that long away. It's 2 weeks from Thursday, and then we are off to the races for a very beloved Super Showdown. And I say that very facetiously. All right, our next question comes to us from Mike Fry, 2012, and he says, what's the real reason why they don't let Naomi win the SmackDown title? Well, I don't think right now that it's the story they want to tell. Now, I think Naomi is a credible challenger. I think that she is certainly going to regain the SmackDown Women's Championship at some point. She's too energetic. She's too charismatic to not hold that championship at some point. So the fact of WWE not letting her, I think, is misguided in that it's just not the time yet. Now, I will say that I think the time is closing in for Bayley to drop the SmackDown Women's Championship. Many people believe that it could be Sasha versus Bayley at WrestleMania. I have been initially resistant to that idea because we have seen this. We've seen this story play out many times over. We've seen this before. But if done correctly, and if done with a lot of thought and preparation into the story as to how and why this is happening, and maybe even acknowledge that throughout the last few years, they have been best friends and frenemies and enemies and lovers. And when I say lovers, I'm not trying to be funny. I remember a part of the story during that whole I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I attack you, I love you. There was actually a point in which I don't know if it was Bayley or Sasha that said, I love you. And the other said, what do you mean? And the other one's like, no, I really love you, as if it was a confession of love, but it was never expanded upon. So that's how convoluted this thing has become or was. And now they align because they are simply were heels. And which I don't think has reached its full potential. And I blame that on creative. I don't blame that on Sasha and Bayley, because after they both turned, they never got a whole lot of follow-up. It was just kind of Bayley coming out, hanging her head with new music and a haircut, but didn't really do much other than just kind of mope. It wasn't a great follow-up. I still agree with the turn, and I was advocating for it, and I stick by both turns, but the follow-up to both, I'd give a D. I mean, it was just not good in what could have been a great heel run, and still could be. But to answer your question, it's not a matter of them letting her win. I think that they will eventually give her that SmackDown championship. She was champion before. She will be champion again. I think she's deserving to be it. She certainly has a lot to offer. She's got a new look. She feels fresh because she just returned. She is a great yin to Bayley's yang. There's a lot of energy, whereas Bayley's kind of the downer. So eventually she will regain it. And maybe it is as soon as WrestleMania. I could see WWE doing a multi-women match for the SmackDown belt at WrestleMania, because I don't think they think that Bayley is suited enough to have and hot enough as a heel, as a character, to have a one-on-one match. I have that suspicion. I have that feeling. And it's something that is in the back of my mind. So if Naomi's involved in this multi-woman match with Bayley at WrestleMania for the SmackDown Women's Championship, I think she has a legitimate shot to win. So I think the fact is she just returned, and I think that it's going to take a little bit of time for WWE to get there. And Bayley's had the belt for quite some time. I think we just need to have a little patience and let this thing play out, and you may be surprised come WrestleMania, or maybe even a little bit beyond that. So
stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Do you guys love movies and podcasts? Well, you guys should check out The Buff and the Blazer. It's a movie review and discussion podcast hosted by Drew, who's the movie buff, and El Tato, the cannabis enthusiast. Together, they review and discuss the latest and greatest films at the box office. You can check out their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com. It includes articles and videos that accompany each film that they review. You can also follow them on Twitter at buffandblazer. And their show is on every single major platform that includes Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and episodes drop every Sunday. Guys, I took a listen to this podcast, and they are very professional. Their sound quality is top-notch. That is such a big deal when you're listening to podcasts, is audio quality, because That is how you reach your audience, and it is absolutely perfect, and their voices just blend well together. They have great chemistry, and they recently reviewed the 1917 film. Very well done. They go into detail. It's not profane. They're just a professional podcast that is going to be rising in the ranks pretty quickly. So jump on board, check out The Buff and The Blazer. They're available everywhere that podcasts are available. And you can check them out on Twitter at Buff and Blazer or on their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com.
Welcome back to the WWE podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, guys, let's get into the next big segment here. That's, to me, Randy Orton. And Randy Orton comes out and still has great heat. I mean, Randy Orton has been getting this true heel heat now for the second week in a row. And it has translated into one of the best storylines WWE has had in quite a while in terms of organic feel. And It's amazing that these storylines are so good when it doesn't have to be overthought. This is not a storyline that needs to be overthought, and it's not. It's straightforward. You have two former best friends, a guy coming out of retirement, the other attacks him, and with no explanation. And you may point to the Royal Rumble and say Randy Orton did what he did because Edge eliminated him from the Royal Rumble, but it has to be deeper. I mean, if it was just the Royal Rumble, you could say that the RKO was the receipt and we move on. But instead, he jeopardizes his livelihood, Edge's livelihood, his family, as a human being, his health, his long-term health, and slams his head in a chair. And so this heat that Randy Orton's been getting has been awesome. And the crowd won't let him talk. It felt very real from a place of true anger and dislike for Randy Orton. And we get Matt Hardy coming out there and saying what he said about how, you know, why would I give a damn about Edge after everything that we've done and the history that has happened between us? You know, why would I give a damn about him? And it was mutual respect, and the fact that it was so long ago, people started chanting Lita. We all know that storyline, well documented. And it was cool to see Matt Hardy out there with his hair growing a little longer in his original Hardy Boy gear and standing up for Edge. And I'm glad they addressed the fact that Matt Hardy and Edge were bitter rivals, not just in the ring, but in real life after what happened with Lita. And my God, if you haven't seen that program, you're doing yourself a disservice. You need to go back and look. But that was, what, 14 years ago? I mean, it was a long time ago. So we have Matt Hardy coming out and defending Edge, talking about, you know, once he came back, or once Edge claimed he had to retire because of his neck and that he wasn't ready, that's when everything for Matt Hardy went away and he just saw the man, Edge. And I wish that he had used the words, his actual name, Adam Copeland. That would have been kind of cool. Because we all know what his real name is. But Matt Hardy's promo was effective. It was real. It was heartfelt. It was long, but that's okay. Randy Orton wanted to hear nothing of it. And, well, let's just take a listen to what he did.
I just got to ask. Please, look at me, Randy. What in the hell is wrong with you?
Matt.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait for the RKO and now Matt Hardy's fighting back.
Matt, like the rest of us, just wanted an answer. Just wanted to know why.
Matt Hardy did not want to suffer the same fate, and he will. An RKO.
Randy.
No.
So Randy Orton gets what he wants and takes his anger out on Matt Hardy, and the crowd was booing again vehemently. It was another well-done segment by all involved. I can't say enough good things about this angle, and using Matt Hardy as a pawn, honestly, so what? I'm sure Matt Hardy was honored at this point in his career to even get TV time from WWE. I'm sure there's a way to write him off of TV, and that's fine, as if he wasn't involved in anything big anyway. And a beloved figure like Matt Hardy being beat down by Randy Orton, considering what he did, was something that I think was well done, well scripted, well executed. Randy is at his best. When is the last time Randy Orton has ever been this relevant? Name it. What, Bray Wyatt when he burned down Sister Abigail's house in the middle of the woods? Kind of hokey. I'm talking about a gut-level, real hatred for Randy. When is the last time? Right? I mean, it's been a long time since WWE has utilized Randy Orton in this capacity, in this magnitude of capacity. It has been a long time, and I'm all for it because I think we're getting reminded just how good Randy Orton can be. I think we've forgotten how nasty, how vile, how damn good he can be at making you hate him, and not in a cool way. That's the key. Not in a cool way. And I think I can say that about all three top heels tonight. Whether it be Shayna, whether it be Randy, or whether it be Seth Rollins, which I'll get to in just a moment as well. All three aren't getting the cool heel chance. Not, you know, they're not getting the Chris Jericho Le Champion or whatever. I didn't take French, okay? I took Spanish. I have zero French fluency, and I have no understanding of the French language other than like un, deux, trois, like one, two, three. That's it. And baguette, right? Is that even French? I don't know. But my point is, Jericho's a cool heel, and he's talented as hell. And he is going down as one of the best ever, future Hall of Famer, all of those things, check the boxes. But when you talk about true heel heat, right now WWE's got three top ones, at least this week. They have Randy, they have Shayna, they have Seth. All three are getting the true heel heat reaction. Randy at the top of the list with his reaction from the crowd, you know, just booing him out of the building. Even when he hit the RKO and Matt, people weren't really cheering. People will react or yell to the RKO now, but they aren't going, oh, that's awesome, we love this move. As beloved as that move is, Randy Orton's character and what his character has done has now overshadowed and poisoned the RKO. It's that good. And think about how beloved that move is. That move is one of the most memed just loved finishers of all time. And I'm sure all of you have seen many of the parody videos on YouTube where Randy Orton is, you know, basically imported into a video where people fall or a plane crashes or whatever. And he's imported into that to make it look like, you know, he's RKOing whoever is falling or whatever is happening in the video. It's actually really well done and hilarious. You have to YouTube this. It is one of the funniest things that you will see with Randy Orton. I'm sure if you just YouTube Randy Orton, RKO, and whatever, I mean, it'll pop up. It is awesome. And to take that move and to dumb it down, or I shouldn't say dumb it down, but to poison it to where the fans don't even want to see it because of what he did to Edge and now what he's done to Matt Hardy, he is truly becoming the legend killer again. At what, 45 years old? Randy Orton is becoming the legend killer again. He's going back to his roots. His facial expressions tell the story. And to top it all off, we still have not gotten an explanation from Randy. After all of that, after what we had to suffer through, getting an RKO out on Matt, hitting him in the head with a chair, and not explaining still what he's done. And, you know, I spoke with my co-host last week and I said, this is what I would do. This is how you build true heat. Have him come out. Don't get him to explain. And maybe he was on his way to explaining before Matt Hardy came out. You could make that case. But the fact is, after he was done with Matt Hardy, he still didn't explain it when he had an opportunity. And so the heat is still on Randy for this, not for Matt interrupting. And he asked Randy point blank, why? What the hell is wrong with you? Which just incensed Randy rather than having Randy give an explanation. he used his words to, or his actions to speak for him. So 2 weeks have gone by, and 2 weeks without an explanation. I love how Edge is not there. There's no presence of Edge. I'm fine with that. I thought last week they said we'd get a medical update on Edge, and maybe I missed it with the Hulu version of Raw. And if I did, somebody let me know. But the fact that Edge isn't there builds anticipation for his return. That's what I like. I'm all for few and far between appearances from Edge. It keeps things special. It makes it feel like it's a big deal when he's there and not just, oh, he's back. Cool, he's here every week. No. That's why when Brock's there, it feels so damn cool. So props to that as well. So A plus to this segment. I loved it. I loved everything about it. And you know, two professionals in the ring with a combined experience of like 40 plus years. Awesome job. So on to the next segment I liked. And that was Seth Rollins and AOP defeating again KO, Samoa Joe, and the Viking Raiders, which was the main event of Raw. So this was frustrating from a fan's perspective of, are they ever going to give KO and Samoa Joe a win? Are they ever going to do it? And you had Samoa Joe take the fall, which is even more surprising given that Samoa Joe is, I guess, by de facto or by perception of fans and how WWE has booked all four of these individuals, that Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens would be towards the top of the pecking order. And to have Samoa Joe take the fall rather than Eric or Ivar of the Viking Raiders was a bit surprising. But I believe that was done on purpose. Samoa Joe made his return at the beginning of Raw to get the Coquita clutch on Seth. Eventually, they were fought off by AOP and Murphy. We don't say buddy now. Even Tom Phillips tripped up and said buddy, and then it was like, buddy, excuse me, Murphy. I mean, it just kind of rolls off the tongue right now, Buddy Murphy, but it's just Murphy, because WWE just, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes WWE is the place where first names go to die. I mean, Antonio Cesaro, I mean, Andrade Cien Almas, and the list goes on. But Murphy, nonetheless, is, I think, a good addition, although we didn't get a whole lot of follow-up and depth added to his character this week. It was just kind of business as usual for these individuals. But Seth had, you know, a good message. He's there for progression and unity. I think taking a page out of the current Democratic Party politics page, right? I think that he definitely used politics to implement into, at least in the phraseology and the language that is currently thrown around right now in politics, particularly with the Democratic Party. You have Seth implementing that in his speech, that he's there for unity and progression, and he's the Monday Night Messiah. All of that. I mean, Seth, I think, was on point this week. I enjoyed his promo at the beginning of Raw, and having Kevin Owens come out again and basically tell Seth to shut up. It seemed like a bit of a broken record. And that's the one thing I will say, is that Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe and the Viking Raiders continue to lose, and they continue to lose. And they continue to lose. And look, I'm all for building heel heat. I'm all for it. I think that it's extremely important. And I think it's something that is underutilized in today's pro wrestling product. And building true heel heat, it's not always about putting smiles on people's faces like, you know, you're at a charity event, right? This is wrestling. It's about getting emotion out of people. And sometimes anger is an emotion that is underutilized, because anger makes you want the other emotion of elation. It makes you long for wanting to see the person that made you angry get his or her ass kicked, so that you can feel the other emotion you know is on the other side of that. And when you constantly just get told that you're going to get a smile put on your face, and you just know that it's coming, it's not as satisfying when you get there, because it's anticipated. And when WWE actually does this true heel heat and does it well, like they did this week with all three top heels, then it makes you angry. But it doesn't make you not want to watch. It makes you want to continue to watch because you know you want to see what you want to see to make yourself feel that emotion. It's all about feeling emotion. Without emotion, we don't give a damn about any show we watch, wrestling or otherwise. So, but nonetheless, Seth, I think, has done a great job. I like his new jacket. It kind of reminded me of Bane a little bit from the Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rising, a little bit. I like how Kevin Owens pointed it out. Seth also continues to get the heat, not the cool heat. Like, you're a cool heel. We can't wait till you actually turn babyface. Well, that doesn't exist for Seth right now. Unlike CM Punk said that that would happen, I never thought it'd happen. Not that I'm smarter than Punk. I just didn't see people cheering Seth, just like I don't see people cheering Randy, although that surprises me more that his RKO and his character's getting as much heat as it has, but that's a testament to both guys' talent. And also Shayna Baszler. That to me is also a bit of a surprise that she didn't get the cool pop of, oh my God, she's here. We're so happy to see her up on the quote main roster. But those lines are starting to get blurred, as you guys know. But that is something that's good, and you need to continue that so that there's clear, defined roles for all involved, and it's not this in-between, up and down, cool heel. Well, I want to get cheered, even though I'm a heel. It's so counterproductive, and I love what they've done. This week was a great week for the heels. Great, great, great week. I can't underscore that enough for all three. So I'll leave that at that. The Drew McIntyre segment with MVP in the VIP lounge. I think they're trying to humanize Drew McIntyre, as well as give him something to do while Brock Lesnar's not there, right? And also the fact that you have Ricochet and Brock kind of the pit stop. Drew's in this no man's land. He's just in a holding pattern waiting for Brock. So while they do that, they're probably going to have Drew do a sit-down interview next week, or maybe do what he did in kind of a nonsense, not VIP lounge, but segments like that are great ways to fill time to keep Drew alive in the minds of fans. He just won the Rumble. Try to keep him and his momentum going through WrestleMania. It's not an easy task, certainly, especially when he doesn't have a clear, defined opponent until WrestleMania, which is Brock. Let's not even fool ourselves that it could be anyone else. Let's not even go there. Let's not be a fool here and think that Ricochet could win. It's Drew and it's Brock. So while Drew waits for Brock to get through Ricochet, you wonder what Ricochet or what Drew's going to also do at Elimination Chamber before things really ramp up full blown after the Chamber. So don't be surprised if the next few weeks to a month is just Drew doing things that are not so much in an official capacity of getting in a program with somebody. Or if it is, it is going to be extremely short term. Drew needs filler, but he also needs meaning. He needs to keep himself fresh in the eyes of fans. And I think the MVP lounge, the VIP lounge, was a great way to do it. The Claymore was got over, and it was, he single-leggedly, God, how many times, it was like somebody in a production meeting said that, oh, well, what if somebody said, he didn't single-handedly, single-leggedly, and Vince is probably, that's a great one, pal. And I'm thinking that somebody probably got a nice attaboy for that line, because WWE said it like four times. And it's not even, like, I get the premise that it's typically they single-handedly, but in this case, Drew's finisher uses his leg, so he's single-leggedly. But he didn't single-leggedly because he uses both legs. So if you want to start getting technical about this and trying to get cute, well, let's break it down. Okay? So I don't know. I think that was over. I think more once was more than enough, but four times was just too much for me. I don't know. But anyway, I like Drew's look. He's more relaxed. He's got a great aura about him right now. There's a lot of filler happening for Drew, as there kind of should be. We don't need Drew getting in a serious long-term program. So whoever he feuds with between now and, say, Chamber is a fill-in. Or if he feuds with anybody at all and it's just kind of a week-to-week let's figure out what to do with Drew this week until we get to Brock. So that's my feeling on that segment. And now I just wanted to quickly talk about Asuka and Becky. Wow. I mean, you talk about a disappointing segment. And yes, I liked, as you guys know, the Shayna Baszler and Becky segment, as I talked about earlier in the show. But what preceded that was Becky Lynch and Asuka, which I thought was going to be, you know, another four-star match, or at least three and a half. And it's going to, you know, blow out the show. And instead, the placement of the match was a little bit suspicious. It wasn't in a, quote, main spot of the show. It was just kind of thrown in an awkward position. And it wasn't, if this was main eventing the show, clearly we would have gotten a bigger quality match. But this was all about Shayna Baszler. And I think that is to Asuka's detriment, because I think Asuka has been making a lot of progress over the last month or two, particularly joining with Kairi Sane and becoming the Kabuki Warriors. And although the women's tag team championships have kind of been forgotten, they're at least around the waist of the most credible tag team in WWE. So that certainly helps. It's not as if they're around the waist of the Iconics, who go away and hide on SmackDown until, you know, Paige shows up and, you know, does what she does. But although, where the hell are the Iconics? Anybody know? I really miss them. I do. I think they were a great act. But with Asuka, all the progress they've made, boy, oh boy, did they send the message this week that Asuka is not where you want her to be. She's where we want her to be. I just didn't like how quickly Becky Lynch defeated her. The one thing that came out of it, beyond the Shayna Baszler segment, it was a new finish for Becky. It looked like a rock bottom almost. I mean, if you go and look, it felt like a rock bottom, or looked like a rock bottom. Maybe we'll come up with a name for it, but it was the move she used to defeat Asuka rather than to disarm her. So that is something to look out for in the coming weeks if she continues to use that maneuver, which I'm sure eventually will have a name if it continues to be a finish. So, but yeah, this to me was the stoppage of Asuka. It was a big cliff for Asuka in this match, because not only did she lose, but she lost quickly and decisively. It was not a great day at the office for Asuka. Let me just put it that way. You know, she had Becky's number. Becky has a hard-fought victory against her at the Royal Rumble, and then she goes and has a third match with her at Asuka's request, and she gets beat handily, quickly, against Becky. And so, for Asuka fans out there, and I'm one of them. It was tough to swallow, a tough pill to swallow, considering where many of us place Asuka in our minds about where she is in the pecking order of the women's division. It was tough to see. It was tough. I mean, I guess that there is a greater good that WWE feels that is necessary for Asuka to lose that quickly, or maybe they just didn't have enough time. Whatever the case, it's how quickly and decisively she lost. That's the problem. Not that she lost, because I think many of us believed that Asuka would lose. It's just the fact that she lost so damn quick and so damn decisively with no possible repercussions. This Asuka-Becky program is essentially over. And I think that Becky or Asuka and Kairi will move on now to the belts that are around their waists, which is the Women's Tag Team Championship. So, and rightfully so. I want those championships to mean something. Even though WWE tried to fake a grassroots movement of planting people with signs of saying we want women's tag belts on their own show, on the camera side, every week, the fact is that those belts, even if they were somewhat of a staged grassroots movement from WWE, they should mean something, and I want them to mean something. And right now they're just kind of sitting there as props on those women who are ultra talented. So I think that will be the front and center of their program moving forward, and as I said, rightfully so. The Sarah Logan Rhea Ripley segment, I will just say this. Has Sarah Logan ever won a match? There is a website that has all the stats on that. I'm just too lazy to look right now. But maybe maybe Sarah Logan should consider a gimmick, rehabilitation program. I don't know, but boy, Sarah Logan is just nothing more than a NXT call-up enhancement talent. And that's sad to say. She was the third wheel in the Riot Squad. She is less than that now on Raw, at least in the way that WWE is framing her. She's just there to make whoever else is in a bigger program look good. And for Rhea Ripley to dominate Sarah Logan the way she did and not allow Sarah Logan to even get a single offensive maneuver in was a mistake. I mean, I would love to have liked to have seen Sarah Logan at least come up with a little bit of offense, a flurry, and then have it shut down by Rhea Ripley. Instead, it was just a complete and total domination of Sarah Logan. And I don't think Sarah Logan's got a fair shake at WWE yet. And maybe we'll see it down the line. Maybe, you know, she'll get a second chance at life. And maybe WWE is trying to figure out, maybe she's trying to figure out what the hell to do with her gimmick, because it's a gimmick that we don't know what it is other than, hey, I like the outdoors, so I'm going to dress like, you know, I'm a tree. I mean, that's what it feels like. You know, let me just put on some foliage and some war paint and let's go. Let's go. That's what it feels like. I don't know what Sarah Logan is. And I don't know if she knows. So anyway, it was just a kind of striking to see Rhea Ripley dominate her so handily, like it was, you know, a 7-year-old child. So the other thing, Ricochet and Bobby Lashley, good match. I understand also why Ricochet won this match, because it's a great warm-up for Brock. And when I say warm-up, I don't mean literally a warm-up. I'm talking about the dynamic and formula of the match he'll have with Brock. That, and also placing doubt in the minds of fans that it's a foregone conclusion Brock's going to win. This is nothing. This is a foolhardy attempt, but I appreciate the attempt. I understand it. Brock, or Bobby, is built like Brock, and for Ricochet to show us how he could defeat Brock, it was important. And I believe that that's the story WWE was going to tell anyway, is that his quickness is going to be his savior and his possible ally against Brock Lesnar. And that's the story they'll tell. Even though we know Brock is super fast, they have to have some kind of story for Ricochet. They can't just have him try to play the Brock Lesnar game. They have to give fans a reason to believe, even if it's a small needle thumb size of hope. And they can't bury him like Kofi, because Ricochet is the future, where Kofi's kind of like the past that ended up being the present and is now back to the past. Ricochet, I believe, they believe, that Ricochet is going to be the future. So you can't just have him win handily and quickly. And I think that that Ricochet will give us a little bit of hope at Super Showdown, ultimately to succumb to the Beast and his 10 German suplexes and F5. So anyway, I think that's it, guys. We had a quick interview with Ruby Riott. I know that Ruby says Ruby finishes saying that Liv will always be a follower, and she strikes when Ruby says so. So this program with Liv Morgan continues. We didn't get a whole lot. She said that she knows the real Liv, and that Liv can take the pink out of her hair, change her clothes, and claim to have changed. But, you know, she's essentially the same person. So Aleister Black wins another match against Akira Tozawa. As we kind of expect, I don't know what they're planning for Aleister Black. They're just continuing the enhancement talent matches, essentially. And I'm fine with that, I guess. I'm sure that they have something in mind for Aleister Black beyond this win streak, of which, again, ironically, he's doing, you know, worse in terms of opportunity and TV time winning than Murphy is in his 3 straight losses to Aleister Black. So it's just interesting, in which sometimes wins don't always mean much, and that's unfortunate. But I'm sure that in due time, Aleister Black will get his time in the sun. So no fear. Have no fear, Aleister Black fans. His time is coming. His time is coming. So anytime somebody feels like they're in a holding pattern, that's a good sign. Not that they're declining, just continuing to win in a holding pattern. So I think that's where Alistair is. So, all right, guys. Well, I think that covers my full Raw review. So I appreciate you staying here. And don't forget, tomorrow will be a Wrestling Nostalgia Show. I'm still working out the exact topic I'm talking about. I have a general idea, but I don't have the specifics yet. So that'll be announced on my Twitter feed at the WWE Podcast. You can also get an ad-free experience of this show at patreon.com/WWE Podcast, where there's some video. There are blogs that aren't that it's exclusive to the Patreon feed. Everything is ad free. You can also get on the show and have your own podcast with yours truly. So that's available to you at patreon.com/WWE podcast. And you can also head on over to the website, which is WWEpodcast.com, for all these podcasts, blogs, and news articles that are written by contributors for the website. So I encourage you to check that out as well. And again, the rest of the week is just your typical NXT review, AEW Dynamite review, and your weekend review coming with my co-host this week, which I think I'll do on Sunday, as Saturday I have plans once again that don't involve drinking, which is a damn good thing. My God, I don't think I've been that hungover in years. I don't know what the hell I did. I mean, really, I started out, and for those of you that don't drink, I get why you don't. I have no problem with that. But those of you that have drank before, you did in your college years, or maybe you are now, man, beer before liquor, never been sicker. I never really believed that. And I've heard it a million times. But once I switched from I was drinking like Bud Light to Captain and Diets, everything went downhill. I mean, it was just a disaster. I mean, I wasn't stumbling or slurring my words, but I had the worst heartburn. I felt sick to my stomach. I've never gotten like that. And I've been drinking, my God, the last like 15 years of my life. So I don't know. I don't know what the hell happened. But anyway, that's just a personal story. I'm finally feeling a little bit better, 3 days later. So, all right. I just want to talk quickly about the dream matches that Seth Rollins put out there. He tweeted out that he would love to face Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania next year at Hollywood. I don't know about that. I wouldn't want to see that. I don't need to see Hulk Hogan in any kind of wrestling capacity ever again, unless it's on the WWE network from, 15, 20 years ago or more. Okay. And Roman Reigns saying he wants to face The Rock. Well, I'm on board, and boy, am I on board if it involves turning Roman heel. So I would love to see that at WrestleMania 37. Let me know what you guys think about those. I think that most would be a little more receptive to The Rock and Reigns, as many of us have talked about for as long as we've known that there's been a connection. But certainly, I don't know how this match happens without turning Roman heel. So, again, we're a year away from that, but certainly something to chew on. I just don't want to see Hogan. For God's sakes, please. I don't need a 70-year-old man doing a leg drop and breaking a hip. So, all right. Well, guys, that's everything I got for you guys today. So lots more to come this week. Tons more audio. So thank you guys as always. I'll talk to you next time. Do you guys love movies and podcasts? Well, you guys should check out The Buff and the Blazer. It's a movie review and discussion podcast hosted by Drew, who's the movie buff, and El Tato, the cannabis enthusiast. Together, they review and discuss the latest and greatest films at the box office. You can check out their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com. It includes articles and videos that accompany each film that they review. You can also follow them on Twitter at buffandblazer. And their show is on every single major platform that includes Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and episodes drop every Sunday. Guys, I took a listen to this podcast, and they are very professional. Their sound quality is top-notch. That is such a big deal when you're listening to podcasts, is audio quality, because that is how you reach your audience, and it is absolutely perfect, and their voices just blend well together. They have great chemistry, and they recently reviewed the 1917 film. Very well done. They go into detail. It's not profane. They're just a professional podcast that is going to be rising in the ranks pretty quickly. So jump on board, check out The Buff and the Blazer. They're available everywhere that podcasts are available. And you can check them out on Twitter at Buff and Blazer or on their website at thebuffandtheblazer.com.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.